Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Theater Tulsa is celebrating its 90th anniversary season this fall. The community theater is considered the longest continuously running community theater west of the Mississippi, one of the oldest arts organizations in the state. Theater has survived war, economic depressions, and numerous financial hardships over the year. It's also where some of Tulsa's most famous actors like Jeannie Triplehorn, Kristen Chenoweth, and Tony Randall received their initial stage training. Over the years, Theater Tulsa has produced more than 600 plays and utilized nearly 6,000 local actors and technicians. In fact, Theater Tulsa will kick off their season with a party Thursday night, August 30th, at Harwelden, which they're inviting everyone who's ever worked, volunteered, or otherwise supported Theater Tulsa to join them to celebrate the 90th anniversary season. And over the years, the history has been rich. In the early years, when no playhouses were available, Tulsa Little Theater, as it was then known, perform in a large tent. During World War II, they entertained soldiers at army bases and military hospitals. In 1981, Theater Tulsa won the National Festival of American Community Theaters Award and was invited to perform at the International Festival in Monaco. And as recently as last year, was named the Theater of the Year by the Oklahoma Community Theater Association. They premiered musicals like Miracle on 34th Street, I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change, and the first American production of Pittman Painters, also the first community theater to premiere Thornton Wilder's Our Town. Despite this rich history, there's been many tough economic times for the organization over the years. In fact, as late as last spring, there were doubts whether Theater Tulsa would start a 90th season. But thanks to the efforts of my guest today, Sarah Phoenix, president of Theater Tulsa, Sally Barnes, manager of Theater Tulsa, the anniversary party will take place Thursday night. The following night, they'll open their 90th season with Neil Simon's The Odd Couple. Sarah and Sally join me today to talk about the history of Theater Tulsa. Sarah and Sally, welcome to Studio Tulsa, and congratulations on Theater Tulsa's 90th season.
Hi, thank you.
Theater Tulsa has been this institution. It's probably, I have to say, our longest arts organization. Is that's a fair statement?
It's one of the longest running arts organizations in Oklahoma. Founded in 1923.
Mm-hmm. And so how are you looking forward to celebrating your 90th anniversary year?
We're going to have a kickoff party to open our 90th season on August the 30th at Harwelden from 6:30 into 8. It's open to any and all, and we hope that people will come and share their stories. The 20 years that I've been involved with Theater Tulsa, I have had so much fun having stories told to me in the most unusual places, people you would not expect. They're not even theater people sometimes.
That's the interesting thing. As a volunteer organization, I would think the institutional memory is sort of a hard thing to pick up, but do you have volunteers that sort of have this connection to the 90-year history?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just from a personal standpoint, and I think I share this with a lot of Tulsans, I mean, my first theater experiences were my parents taking me to see Theater Tulsa shows at their theater down at 15th and Delaware. I got to be in theater. It was a really big deal when I got to be in my first Theater Tulsa show. You know, it was such a cultural institution, and I think so many people have stories like that. My mother volunteered, or my first theater, I saw the show they did at the PAC. There are so many stories out there, and that's one of the things we really want to do with this 90th season kickoff is just pull everyone together to raise a glass to 90 years and to the future of the organization. It's really amazing that it's lasted for so long.
That is really a completely volunteer organization sticking around for 90 years. And when you think of what theater was like probably in 1923, very different than it is in 2013 or 2012.
They were in a tent. They were performing in a tent, I'm sure, yeah. With no electricity and...
So what do we know about the founding of what, I guess it was at Tulsa Little Theater at that particular time?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Bonnie Hallway and Hope Reed were the co-founders. And these two young women were walking home, the story goes, from a meeting of the University Women's Association. And they were chatting and talking, and somewhere in that conversation came up, Tulsa doesn't have a theater company, let's do it.
So how did Tulsa get entertainment at that time? Was it traveling shows and things?
I would think so. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any history that bears up what was going on. But these young women, their culture, they were from back east. So this was not an unusual spot.
That's really a Tulsa story right there, is we had so many people from the east come to Tulsa in particular to settle. and they wanted the same sort of cultural opportunities that they had back east.
They did. Mrs. Holloway's husband was W.R. Holloway, who was a Grand River Dam project engineer. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of see where that background comes from. These were young women who were educated, and they loved the theater, and they wanted their home to have a theater company. And so I cannot even imagine what it was like when they started this theater company. I know their family supported them. I think one of the things that's very unique about Theater Tulsa is that here we are 90 years later, and we still have connections with the family of Hope Holloway and Bonnie Reed. I actually spoke with Mrs. Reed's daughter just last week. And she was talking about how in the early days, her father, Paul Reed, had done some of the posters, had made some of the posters and done that type of thing. So in my experience, and I've been with Theater Tulsa now for almost 20 years, what has really surprised me is how little is known about Tulsa having this institution that has sustained itself for 90 years. And every time in the past that I have said, yes, I'm with Theater Tulsa, we're celebrating our 80th season, our 85th season, or whatever, the look of surprise on their faces. And I don't know if it's because we got comfortable and we assumed everyone knew. I don't know.
Well, I have to say, in just my experience of following Theater Tulsa, it's not been one of a sort of slow ascent. It's been one of growth and decline, growth and decline, and nearly folding probably, what, a half dozen times?
Oh, yes.
And so what do you attribute the resiliency of this organization to? Because I can at least count on one hand the number of times where when people are talking about this organization, they said, well, you know, within a couple of seasons, they can do some of the most incredible work. And then within a season or two, it's, you know, people are writing it off as dead. Mm-hmm. What do you attribute the resiliency to?
Well, I mean, I think what's just happened over the past couple of months is kind of a telltale sign of what's happened in the past. You know, Theater Tulsa has really been struggling over the past couple of years. And, you know, there's just been a group of us that have gotten together over the summer and said, we are not going to let this organization die, and we are going to find a way for it to survive. And we have some new and innovative ideas, and I think that that's probably happened over the course of history, just like it's happening now. And Sally can tell you the story about where she was in May with the organization. Things were not looking good at all.
And this is coming off 2 years ago. You won the first Tate Award for the best theatrical production in the city. And within 2 years, it's like you're on the verge of closing the doors or deciding whether to go forward or not.
Right. It really has been cyclical. And I will say this group of people that have kind of bonded together over the summer to bring some momentum to the organization. I think one thing that's exciting is that we have some experience outside of the Tulsa area. And this goes back to Bonnie and Hope's experience. I get to travel. I'm a volunteer with the American Association of Community Theaters. And so I travel around the country and I get to go see some of the most successful community and civic theaters all over. And I get to see what they're doing and what innovative programs they're instituting and why they're thriving. I mean, and these are community theaters that are working on $500,000, $1 million budgets, and they're doing quality professional work. And I get to see and talk to them about how they're doing that and how they're making it happen. And so in May, when I was talking to Sally and she was saying, Sarah, I just don't know what's going to happen with Theater Tulsa. To me, I thought this was such a great opportunity to take this organization and make it what it should be and take all of these ideas that we've been seeing and bring them to Tulsa, which is exactly what Hope and Bonnie did back in the 20s.
So. Exactly. Yeah. In May, I'm a stage manager. Mm-hmm. I actually went out on the stage because the stage manager closes everything down. She's the final person, final call. The stage was quiet. I'm going to be really dramatic. The stage was quiet. The ghost lights were on. I turned around and I looked around and I said goodbye. That's where we were in May. Mm. I said goodbye because we had no money. It looked like we had no hope. And yet, because I have been with this organization these many years and I have looked at their history and I've watched it resurrect itself, I kept thinking in the back of my mind, where the heck is the Calvary? I know they're going to come, and here she is.
Well, it's not just me. I can't take credit for it, but Yeah, I definitely rounded up some of my friends, theater people and non-theater people, just friends that support the idea of the organization and wanted to pitch in and help.
And the following night after your opening party, you're going to open Neil Simon's The Odd Couple.
Yep. Yes. And we're really excited about that. We're really excited about all of our shows this season. The Odd Couple is going to be a fun one just because it's a classic American comedy. It's funny. We have a great director and cast, some of the best actors in Tulsa. So it's going to be an excellent production.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, we've talked about some of the low points, but Theater Tulsa has had an awful lot of high points over the years. For many years, it was the only game in town. So yes. This was the theater company. And of course, in the 60s and 70s, all of a sudden there were starting to see more, and of course today that everybody's got a theater company. I think that would make it very difficult compared to the past, but you still manage to find people who are willing to volunteer, and really a lot of theater in this town is voluntary. Let's not mince words. It's people doing it for the love of the craft, but they come out, they'll spend 2 months getting ready for, or 6 weeks for a show, and going out and doing it, and not only on stage, but people behind the scenes like yourself, Sally, who, you know, you don't get the curtain calls. You just do it for the love of the art form. Let's talk about some of the high points, because you were talking about a great director for Odd Couple. I can remember there have been times when Theater Tulsa has had a resident director as mm-hmm. sort of their manager, mm-hmm. and they produce some incredible theater. I'm thinking yes. the early 80s. Mm-hmm. I think there was another period in the late 80s or early 90s where you had this sort of resident director, mm-hmm. professional director.
Right, an artistic director.
An artistic director. Yep. And that really, those were high points.
And we'd like to get back to that point, honestly. That's really where we see the organization going, is to be able to have professional staff like that. It's definitely on our mind to get back to that place. But I think part of that, too, is realizing that to really be a sustainable theater organization, you really have to have a board behind you that isn't just a bunch of artists. And nothing against artists, because you need them. You need that creativity.
They don't have any money.
Yeah, usually not. But, you know, that was one thing we specifically did this summer, is find board members who are not actors, who don't do stagehand work. They have a degree in marketing or finance, or they understand corporate governance and can understand how the organization needs to be structured. And so that is one focus where we really wanted to put our energy, is setting this organization up from a business standpoint so that it can support the art and the artists and the great work that they can do. And so we're hoping to harness that so that then it will flow over into the artistic side of things.
My guest today is Sarah Phoenix, the new president of Theater Tulsa. Sally Barnes is the manager of Theater Tulsa. Theater Tulsa is celebrating its 90th anniversary this year. It has to be the oldest theatrical organization in the city, perhaps in the state. I know it's considered to be the longest continuously running community theater west of the Mississippi. Mm-hmm. There are probably some older ones in Boston and Philadelphia, but west of the Mississippi. It is lots of famous actors and actresses have gotten their start at Theater Tulsa. Can you maybe tell us some of the people who've gone through Theater Tulsa on their way to places bigger and better?
Probably most notable would be Kristen Chenoweth, who's a famous Broadway film mm-hmm. and TV star. She was in a production of Anything Goes, which I actually saw, but I didn't know who Kristen Chenoweth
was. No.
I was more enamored with Sally Adams, who's a local actress who played Reno, and I still remember that from my youth. I don't even remember Kristen Chenoweth, but I'm sure she was fabulous. Jeannie Triplehorn, mm-hmm. who's currently on the Big Love HBO series and has been in several movies, and Tony Randall.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Harris, also a famous Broadway star. And the list goes on. And let me tell you, I have had so much fun looking through the archives at Theater Tulsa. We have a file for almost every production that has been done at Theater Tulsa since like 1932, with programs and photographs and letters and whatever was associated with that particular production. This archive is fantastic. And we're really looking at trying to get a grant to digitalize all of it. Because it is fascinating to look through. And you start to get a sense of the thousands of volunteers, thousands of Tulsans over 90 years who have given their time, their energy, their talent, their resources to make this organization grow. It's really inspiring.
What's most interesting about the archives when you look at some of the unusual plays they've done, or some of the, you know?
I think, because I'm a stage manager, and so I'm going to look at things from the technical side, what really caught my attention was in these early years in the Delaware Playhouse, the sets that they did and the costumes that they did were remarkable considering what we have to work with now and what they had to work with then.
And when you think of the backstage space at the Delaware Playhouse, I mean, where would you put a set?
Where would you put it? Amazing, amazing storytelling with what was available at the time. Very creative people. One of the things that I love about theater, and I think this has sustained Theater Tulsa, and by the way, I have to brag, we are the seventh oldest in the nation.
Okay.
But one of the things that has helped sustain Theater Tulsa, theater in general, is where else do you find a doctor, a student, someone that's unemployed, maybe a nurse, a young mother? Where else do you find a place where they gather together and they bond and they do this wonderful storytelling? And it's a complete circle. It's not just the actors on the stage telling the story, because the set helps to tell the story. The set pieces help to tell the story. The lighting helps to tell the story and the sound. And we all just bond. We come together and this becomes our focus, and it's magical. It just is.
Now, as you celebrate your 98th anniversary, you're really trying to make reconnections with a lot of people who have helped the organization over the years, either acted in it, been behind the scenes, sort of helped run it at one point or another. What are you hoping to gain from hearing these stories? I mean, are you going to try to archive some of the stories that you're hearing?
We are. We're really lucky to have the Emmy Award-winning Jinx High School Film Department do a documentary on this season, and they're going to be looking for people to interview. But I think it's just really a time for everyone to rally around Theater Tulsa, to come back and volunteer to be involved, maybe even purchase a season subscription and come support the shows this season, because we really are making a turnaround here, and both from the business side of things, but also artistically speaking. And we want to see this company thriving at its 100th centennial anniversary in 10 years, hopefully before that. And we have a lot of great ideas and plans, and we need help. It can't just rest on, you know, one group of people. It takes a community. It takes a village to make a theater like this continue to thrive, especially in this time and when we're competing against movies and video games and, you know,
and
all
countless
of these,
other
countless
sports.
We were just talking about football starting, you know, which are all wonderful things. But we have to preserve this art form, and for our community, we have to preserve Theater Tulsa.
Now, I was looking at some of the history of Theater Tulsa. It was the first community theater to do Our Town
in
1939. I can remember when you actually were commissioning a musical. You did Miracle on 34th Street. That was actually a Theater Tulsa commission.
Yes.
Give us some other ideas of some of the high points of things you've done.
Well, we also did the premiere of All My Sons, which is an Arthur Miller play, and I Love You, You're Perfect Now, Change, which is a more recent musical. The theater also has twice won the National Festival for the American Association of Theaters and traveled
community theaters.
Traveled internationally to festivals, but it really does have a very rich history of doing really innovative and interesting things, and we want to continue that.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with the season. It starts with the Odd Couple at the end of this month.
Yes.
And we'll continue, I guess, all through the year.
We're collaborating with Odeum Theater Company to do Hamlet in October, and we're doing a really innovative program where we're doing a teen cast and an adult cast.
Oh, interesting.
So that collaboration we're really excited about. You talked about there being so many theaters in town. That's one way to kind of harness the energy and the talent that's all over town by collaborating with them. We're excited about that.
Now, is that something that Theater Tulsa could look at, it, you know, to help, is doing
Definitely.
Collaborations, because there are so many theater companies that actually a partnership for a particular production allows you to do something you might not be able to do on your own.
Right, exactly. We want to do that. And actually, many of the theater companies in town, Theater Tulsa was their birthplace. You know, the people that are running them met doing a show at Theater Tulsa. And so, again, we want to invite those people back to be involved in this historic season. We have Tuesdays with Maury starring Tom Berenson coming, a musical adaptation of Oliver with lots of fun kids and Boeing, which I don't think has been done in Tulsa. It's a French farce that is absolutely hilarious. We end the season with that in May. So it's really exciting, and we're starting an education program too for youth. So all that information's on our website. So we're excited to pull more people in, and the old gang and the new, and everyone new who wants to be involved.
Yeah. All right. Well, Theater Tulsa is celebrating its 90th anniversary this season. There'll be a season opening party on Thursday, August 30th at Harwell. And you're really inviting anybody who's had anything to do with the company to come back, right?
They just need to go to our website and RSVP to be put on the guest list. But yes, anyone who's been involved, please come. We'd love to talk to you.
All right. Sarah and Sally, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Sarah Phoenix and Sally Barnes of Theater Tulsa. Theater Tulsa is celebrating its 90th anniversary season. Their season gets underway Friday night, next Friday night, with the opening of The Odd Couple by Neil Simon. But the previous night, Thursday at Harwellden at 6:30, they'll be asking everyone who's ever worked, volunteered, or otherwise supported Theater Tulsa to join them for a 90th anniversary party. For details on attending, visit theatertulsa.org. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. The 1930s felt like the end of the world in western Oklahoma. Month after month, the sky grew dark, air made people choke, livestock died, and crops turned to dust. For a decade, the Great Plains were hit with dust storm after dust storm as a result of unsustainable farming practices, and the panhandle of Oklahoma was nicknamed the Bull's Eye of the Dust Bowl. In this short documentary from This Land Press, folk musician and historian Tom Naples walks us through the Dust Bowl and tunes us into archival recordings and oral histories of the people who lived through the misery of those dark days.
In the panhandle of Oklahoma, the cattle are dead. They cut the lungs open and were solid, packed with dirt. That's how intense the dust storms were. My name is Tom Naples. I'm a folk singer, and I do oral histories. Most of what I have researched over the last 10 years has been music and poetry and writing from the Great Depression in the Dust Bowl. During the late 1930s, the Library of Congress wanted to document what was happening in the Dust Bowl and in the West. They not only took thousands and thousands of photographs. A collector being paid by the Library of Congress had this looked like a giant suitcase in the trunk of his car. And there would be discs, aluminum discs on there. And he would hook up a microphone. Someone would just come up to the microphone and...
We looked in the north and thought it was the Blue Norther coming. Such a huge black cloud, just looked like smoke out of a train stack or something. We was all afraid and we ran into the storm house. Because we thought it was a storm. And we lit the lamp, and it was just so dark in there that we couldn't see one another. We just had, even with the lamp lit, and we just choked and smothered. And the old-timers said they'd never seen nothing like that.
There was a Great Depression. There was a collapse of our credit system. And then there was the Dust Bowl. The Dust Bowl would have happened anyway had there not been a Great Depression. The Dust Bowl was the perfect storm. The Great Plains were covered with prairie grass. Prairie grass has very deep roots, so it appears to die, but it holds the soil. Starting with World War I, the United States needed a lot of wheat to feed our soldiers and to feed our allies in Europe. So they started ripping out the prairie grass, and they began planting cotton and wheat. So when the drought hit in the 20s, the wheat, the corn, everything died. Their roots wouldn't hold the soil, and that caused the dust storm. When a dust storm would hit, the static electricity would become so great. There's actual cases that barbed wire sizzled and sparked. You could touch somebody and knock them over from the shock.
This one time that I can remember, never will forget. It was cold and the wind was blowing.
And the wind just blew and blew and blew and blew and blew.
And it just looked like a storm cloud.
And I looked up and the birds was just flying ahead of that dirt storm. I said, Dad, that thing's awful looking. And Mother lit the lamp. It was dark. You couldn't see your hand like this in front of you. Mother rushed and got some wash rags. And while she was doing that, the lights went out. And she said, oh, my goodness, you get on the floor. We was there for nearly an hour. And we stayed and we went through dirt storm after dirt storm after dirt storm. We didn't have a crop. We didn't have anything. Sardines. That was our main food.
They was 7 years that we didn't raise nothing. Nothing.
It was a ecological disaster, man-made ecological disaster. People lost their farms, and many were sharecroppers who had worked on someone else's farm. And they were thrown off because there was nothing to do. Everything was covered with dust. Here in Oklahoma, people were starving to death. So they moved to California with the hope that they would work in the California fields. Route 66 ran from Tulsa to Oklahoma City and then, you know, straight across. That was the route that the migrants took. 66 would be full of cars with mattresses tethered to the front. People took the linoleum up from their kitchen floors in rolls and loaded it in their cars. There's a wonderful poem called Hard Luck Okie by a man named Roy Turner, who lived in Oklahoma City. And he describes in this poem leaving Oklahoma City and crossing the desert.
Started this poem in 1939, May the 4th, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and started in California. In that dear state of Oklahoma, in the city where buildings are high, I laid on my pillow so hopeless, looking through my tin shack at the sky. I got up early next morning, out in the cold I did creep, walked off without any breakfast, and left 2 hungry babies asleep. And then I left that big city, I walked down 60 Highway. I had a good reason for leaving, so I headed for Pacific Bay. Then I seen the Texas cotton and the Mexico bottomless lakes and the Arizona Gila monster and the big diamond rattlesnakes. One night I heard the little coyotes. I listened to their pitiful whine. I wondered if the poor little creatures didn't have hungry babies like mine. That same night I dreamed of my father. He said, boy, don't never go back. He said, give them dummies your part of that city and that little old rusty tin shack. I started this poem on the desert, my bed lying out on the ground, then covered up my hungry babies and smoked a cigarette and laid down. Then I picked peas in California from 2 to 6 hampers a day, trying to make a few pennies to drive that old hungry away. Oklahoma, farewell.
Oklahoma, farewell. They went to California, and who knows?
The Perfect Storm was produced by This Land Press audio producer Abby Wendell. For more stories, visit thislandpress.com. Excerpts from the oral history interviews are from the Oklahoma Women in the Dust Bowl Oral History Project, courtesy of the Oklahoma Oral History Research Program at Oklahoma State University. Additional archival tape from the Charles L. Todd and Robert Sonkin Migrant Worker Collection at the American Folklife Center of the Library of Congress. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher.